name is William Durack, and regimental number is 86473.
Where were you born?
I'm born in Winnipeg Beach, west of Winnipeg Beach.
What town?
Winnipeg Beach, approach as a district.
Okay. And were your parents Canadian born?
No, my mother and father both come to the country when they were. Mother was 5, and my father was 6 years old when they immigrated to this country.
Oh, yes, so your parents. And where did you go to school?
Winnipeg Beach.
Winnipeg Beach.
And in Winnipeg here at McCray
School. McCray School. So your family came. What type of work did your dad do?
He's a carpenter and architect.
And did he have a hard time with depression with your kids?
No.
Managed fine.
Just managed to escape along.
That's good. Now, what type of work did you do? When were you born? What year?
1912.
1912. And what did you do before you joined up? What type of work did you do?
Well, I worked for the Beach Attractions at Winnipeg Beach for 17 summers.
What was that?
From the dance hall up and down, from the dance hall right to the roller coaster. Sort of jack of all trades.
Sort of maintenance man, what you call it, a running thing?
No, just more on the clerk line.
Sort of running the concessions. The organizing.
Yeah, at the dance hall the last 7 years I was there.
And you used to play there?
My Spinister and quite a few of the Jewish works, I just can't remember the name, but they had the orchestra, but there's all kinds of them. In fact, there was my Spinister that died in that car accident long ago. He's one of the last ones that were there. And the McKnight boys that were with us in Hong Kong.
The two McKnight boys?
There's two, see them.
Oh, yeah.
They were in one of the orchestras that played there. I think it was my Spinister too. If I remember right. I think they were in that door.
Did those movement type boys live or did they die?
Well, they all lived.
They all lived.
As far as I can remember.
And so, in the wintertime, what did you do? Your family, did they have a farm or what?
No, I had a house at the Winnipeg just off Hazel Neat Street.
Oh, yeah. And what did you do in the winter?
Well, there's work to do, we didn't. Or we didn't, we went to the bush. Or ice making, ice cutting.
You did that,
eh?
No, your family did fishing or anything like that. Do you remember what you used to get paid in the bush?
Oh, we get paid by the cord or log or like that. But it was better to stay at home.
Mm-hmm. What did you get paid, do you remember? Don't you?
Well, it was by the cord. It all depended on how many cords of wood you cut a day.
Yeah, you don't know how much they paid a cord, do you?
It was $1 a cord.
$1 a cord. How did you cut it? That kept you in good condition.
Sure, that's for sure.
So, what made you join up?
Well, we're just on our way from. We used to go harvesting. There's two or three of us. We used to go harvesting every year. And we come in from Carmen. We start off at Ross Burling and Carmen District, and gradually work to Gravelburg up in the northern Alberta. Around Peace River District, where that me.
Did you have your own equipment, or did you just work for? You just went as thrashing gang.
Yeah, thrashing gangs. I like working with horses, and that's what I went after.
Do you remember what your wages were in those days? Quite a bit, quite good.
$3.50, $4 a day.
Yeah, and board, wasn't it? So, you came back to Winnipeg. Tell me about joining up.
Well, we come back from that district there, where I was telling you, Carmen, and the boy decided that instead of going there, going any further, we're bound to be hooked one way or another, either now or later. So we just signed up.
Who were we?
Oh, there's that one of the boys, Jimmy Barnett, I was going with. I just don't remember the third guy's name. But Jimmy wouldn't sign up. He went somewhere else. I signed up.
Where'd you sign up?
It was Crown Trust Building on me.
And what made you choose the Grenadiers?
Well, my father-in-law tried to get me to sign with his outfit, but they weren't recruiting at that time.
What was your different
one? Little Black Devils. Black
Washington. So you just went to Grenadiers because they were available. You had no special reason for doing it.
Well, these were picking on men at that time. They were told they were very strict. They had to be certain height, certain weight. So I often wonder how some of the boys that were in the regiment got in because they were, well, below average height.
Yes. I saw a couple too myself who were below height. And
then
I know of other fellows who were just...
Well, they're probably the only reason that I could figure out they were in the... Probably from the force or the militia or something like that, and I just wonder what we got to sign in with them.
When did you sign them?
September. August was a war after that. 39, I did. Around September.
Were you married then? You had family over there?
Girl, Doreen, and daughter.
And you were still living in one big beach at the time when you signed up?
No, we were in
Winnipeg Beach.
Right in
the woods.
Oh, yeah.
So, what did you do when you joined the Grenadiers? You tell me about your training.
I had basic training to mental armors. And there we were. Well, we stayed there until it was too cold to train outside. And we went to a bull rider that was moved to 4,000 barracks. Stayed there, I wonder.
What did you learn? What did training did you do? What was it like?
Basic military training.
No, but I mean, did you train on guns or marches or
what? Oh, yeah. The whole guns and machine guns. Vickers machine guns. We really were a machine gun outfit.
That was the idea.
And when the... disbanded, took away all machine guns away, and made us into a infantry unit.
Where was this?
In Winnipeg.
Okay, they took, and they made you into an infantry unit. Before you left for Jamaica?
No, we were made an independent unit to go to Jamaica.
Why?
See, we had to go through tests and drills when they were picking out the regiment to go to Jamaica. We had to go through tests. Committee or the outfit that were, the officials that were picking out the best regiment to go to Jamaica. They were having tests right from coast to coast. And we were picked here today.
And how many of you went to Jamaica?
Around 1,900 and 1,000. But we went from somewhat to Jamaica, others went to Marina.
Where's Marina?
Marina?
Yes.
And then the U.S.?
Oh, I see. I didn't hear that yet. Okay. Anybody mentioned that?
Well, yeah, that's the only place I know, Marina.
No. And what's
on the West Coast?
Oh, yeah. What did you do in Jamaica?
We were at a concentration camp there. And I had guard all the government buildings, installations, harbor, ship patrol. Ship patrol is that we'd go out, patrol boat would take us a mile out from the entrance of the harbor because Jamaica Harbor is a natural harbor, earthquake made harbor. Like. And it was narrow, just not much more than 2 or 3 boats could pass at one time, as they did. So they'd take us out. We boarded all the each ship coming in or going out. It had different places all over the ship, right from the engine room, and make sure that they didn't play a scuttle. Same thing going out, same thing all over.
Did you have any experience that way, or was everything on the ship? Didn't find that there was anything
really.
Did you find anything?
Well, it was an experience, all right. And not only that, but some also were the ones that went. Were in the Grenadiers and went overseas. Was the only way chance they had of getting outside of Canada. I had talked a lot of it said that.
Yeah. No, but what I'm talking about is when you were checking these ships, did you find any?
No, they're all American ships and these are Allied ships are coming in.
Well, there was nothing really.
There's no chance of being scuttled or any damage caused.
How did you like Jamaica?
Jamaica was all. We had it, we could have stayed there, but things turned out different, so we just had to go where we were told to go.
Did you get sick in the major?
Yeah, well, this is dingy fever. They call it, it's more or less, more from heat and not eating our type of foods. That's what I put it to. Because after 6 months, your blood just thinned down, hardly water, too hot. You couldn't eat our food there steady. Too rich, it would break up in rashes and pimples on it. The only thing I didn't like about it is this guard duty to be on anywhere from 24 to 72 hours at a crack.
That doesn't make sense, does it?
Well, a lot of the boys got off the wrong end of the stick. And actually, when they were sick in the hospital or anything like that happened to them, sometimes they got slacked. There's nothing that wasn't hard to do, but too many repeated times it over and over again sort of got you down after a while.
And it was nothing to do,
I suppose. Lots to do.
What did you do? What was it doing? I mean, you'd have to go there. Did you have anything to do with the handling of the prisoners?
No, not unless we're called in any case of trouble. That's the only time we were actually could go in the camp, because they had a compound there, a concentration camp. It's like a walk. The camp was inside, and then there's a walk all around it. Towers at each corner, and in the center of each. Or you had to just walk up down there, staying awake, night and day.
Like a sentry duty?
Oh, that's all it was, a sentry duty. One that half the camp was Italians and the other was Germans.
And they really gave no trouble?
Oh, a few times they had a fight.
Any tried to escape?
Oh, a few of them tried to escape and they didn't get away. I know I have to catch hear noises and one night time at night and I called the officer and we found doctors. The Germans were trying to escape. They only had about a foot to go and they could have beat it.
Were they digging up?
Digging up in their huts, underneath their huts, bringing the dirt up during the night. In the day, they'd put flower beds on the shacks and everybody got kind of wise. After a while, where the devil were they getting this dirt? Then they checked it, they found one hut, and they let that ride go on and found out later where they were getting it. So put stuff to that. It's pretty slick, but they really had a good detective up in there. They knew more. They had more information about us, what we're doing, where we're going. They could even told us the day a week or two before we left, when we were coming home in advance, what section was going, what boat we were taking, what route we were going to take, and everything. They had everything down right to a present.
Only the Germans, then.
Had a good police outfit, the detective out there, or Gestapo, whatever you want to call it. They told us everything. Our own officers wouldn't tell us. Probably didn't know or didn't want to tell us. Couldn't blame them. But they had a really good 100% effective.
So, when did you come back to Canada?
September. It's home from Hong Kong. But we come back from Jamaica. The woman, it was in September. Early part of September, around the middle of September, it could take a few days. Because I remember the woman were wearing shorts.
Yeah.
And open neck shirts, dress and all that. And we could feel the difference in the temperature halfway between Bermuda and New York. We were freezing by the time we come here. We were shivering. You were standing outside naked.
Did you have a hard time with the heat, or did you get used to the heat?
Well, after a while, they did. Once they found out what was giving all the boys a rash and itches and all that, they cut down on the heavy food and went more or less to the food that was acceptable there. More fluid and less hard stuff.
What you do when you
go
back to
Winnipeg? Well, we only hear about it. I mean, being in advance party coming home, we only hear about 5 or 6 weeks and we shipped up to Hong Kong.
Did you have any idea you were going there?
Well, more or less. Some did, some didn't, but you couldn't believe it or say for sure where you were going.
Did you
the one that Jean gave us trouble floating around. We were still going to a hot place.
What rank were you in?
I was still fine.
Can you tell me something about your boat trip?
It was a nice trip. I had only one scare, that's all. That was when an American submarine come between us, come up between us and our escort. And they'd run out of fuel after we left up to Hawaii. And, before that, when that submarine come up, they run out of fuel on heavy seas, and they stopped our ship for getting some fuel for it. Well, that's the only time we had any scare, but most of us didn't know about it because they didn't let us know. So we found out that the submarine was a friendly one. It didn't raise the alarm anymore. But to watch, so what I liked about that trip, not only was a ride, but in fact, I never was sick all the time I was on board. And then watch the boat that took us to Hong Kong, which was an Australian ship, which later was sunk by the Japanese. And watch that gunner in the back, Pax. And they hit a nickel at a mile away.
He had a gunner was on the ship. What type of gun did he have?
A good gun. Very big gun.
A big gun. And he did gun practice. What did he practice on?
Shooting at different targets. The escort ship tore out a target or something like that. Blast away at it. Pretty good one. He didn't hit it.
What did you do on
both? I practiced and kept on drill. In shape. That's all I had to do something because we're on the board and it was 20 or 21 days.
I guess going to...
Well, we couldn't go a straight road, but the ship's going east on that. It goes zigzag all over the place.
Yeah, terrible.
Well, it took us a week to get from here to Jamaica. 7 days. And to Hong Kong for 20 days, 20 or 21.
And what was it like when you
in Hong Kong?
Yeah. What you thought?
Yeah, we didn't have much time to think of it until, because as soon as we got there, we were told not to say, warned not to talk to anybody, we get to talk about anything, who we were in. But we were CB'd, we got confined to barracks for the first 5 days. When we got there, and if we had one officer, but we were put under British command, British orders, and until everything was said, that way I stay in camp. Apparently, the boys didn't like to come find, they wanted to hear, see the city of it. He was the one who would have won.
I didn't think you'd stay in there like good little kids.
Not after the good time you used to have in Jamaica. And to be told that you just have to stay in until they decided to make up their minds to let us out. Boy, it didn't bother them. So we made our own ways of getting up.
So you went to jump cast and
off to downtown. Had a few drinks and back home.
Where were you? Did you have any idea at that time that the Japanese were around and that something was doing? Did you have it? I mean, yourself? Because I know they didn't.
Oh, well, only a major week ago from speaking to some of the local Japanese or the local up there with the volunteers who got to know what to do. And they were telling us that the British government knew that the Japs were there across the border 6 months before that. All they had to do was walk across the barracks. The only thing is, well, the thing I didn't like, I was told that I can't prove it because I was in the know at the time. No way I'm finding out. But because they knew the Japs were there, and they could have stopped everything. And it changed the regiment that knew the mainland. This is British outfit. They put them on the islands, and the ones that knew the island put them on the mainland. Confused them both, put them both out, and we had to come in and fill in the spaces.
Where were you when the war was there?
We're up in the hills from this CD. Well, CD training was supposed to be up in the hills in the Hong Kong Island, because Hong Kong itself is an island. About a mile and a half for water separating the island from the mainland. The new territory was released to the British. You often read the papers. We had to go to the company I was in, had to go to rear guard action for the British outfit that was getting hammered to pieces. So we actually were, our company, D Company, was the first outfit to see actual action.
Where were you? Did it have a name of the place you were at the time?
It was on the mainland of China.
No, but I mean, like they had different positions. Like some people were at Jardine Point.
Well, when we came back to the island, my company was in the Guangchong Gap.
Guangchong Gap.
That's right across up the hill from the racetrack. That's where my company was. It was spread right across the hills, down across the hills, and Guangchong Gap. And Mount Cameron. And well, they were all around them, but different companies were. And I don't know where the rest of the companies were. The other three companies were, because we were supposed to, each company had to take certain positions.
What were you doing? Were you
ever
done with you or what?
I had my rifle and ran into a bread gun, but they're only good for accurate shooting. But, I don't know, I think I'd have been better off with a machine gun.
Were you hurt?
I had a ricochet bullet in the arm. I was in here with it. Slid open and knocked all my teeth and cut myself off. Piece of steel from a naval shell. And I could see it before I started to lose consciousness. I had an ALGOM until the inner part, left side of A, on Algoma.
So, was it Canadian?
No, it was American junk. Crap on it. Yeah, to the bottom of the Americans.
And were you knocked out with that?
Well, it was just a few minutes before I started. I lost too much blood and I lost consciousness, and there was a British corporal that bandaged me up. There was a bit of fun there, too, because we had collected the boys that were killed or all around us, collected these hand grenades. I had a few of them with tied around the waist on copper wire, each individual ones. And the one that was covered with these coveralls, like overalls. I had one in my back pocket here. When the I got hit on the space of what? About 12:30. Lunch hour, we call it. And I remember when the first aid posted this. British corporal took me to the nurse. I think she must have been a volunteer nurse. The war nurse wouldn't have pulled off, but this one pulled off. And as the doctor was cleaning me out and fixing me up, she was in and I was laying on my hip and it hurt. I'm laying on it, so I went to pull out and she said, "I'll get her anything you want that's in there." And she pulled up the air with this last hand grenade loose. I grabbed it by the hook. She swung it. And I asked the doctor, he says, "How hard are you doing?" Gulped, and he turned as white as a sheet and says, "You want to see daylight? Says, don't pull that skin out." And I still remember, as he gave me, there was a Chinese doctor that gave community know, you know where it is in the army before you got freedom. You see the big clock on the wall hanging there about 5 minutes to five. And you didn't even let you wake up till the next morning. The Roman Catholic bishop giving the last rites. Some of the boys that were an Indian and all that were dying. And all I wanted was rest and to smoke. And what irritated me was that the medical corps, the British medical corps there, the three of us had quite a bit of money with us. A few day, a day or two before that, we'd bought out three peddlers that were selling bars and cigarettes. And all I wanted was a smoke. I said, well, the nurse is going to get me my pack to give me a pack of cigarettes. Come back and says, it's all gone. And that's which that R.C. Padgett come there, the bishop, he wanted to give me the last rites. And I have sleeping dopey. I was cursing my head off on him to get, get away from me. Just leave me alone because I want to smoke. I'm not going to get guys like that. Too much to live for. He's trying to quiet me down. The next day when he come back after I get worn off, I didn't know which way to turn. He come over and told me, no worries, you're not the first one that zipped told me out.
Of course you were in shock too, eh, from the operation.
Okay.
So what happened to you after that? How long were you
in hospital? I was there about 2.5 months, 2.5, 3 months, and then we were sent to in the father's monastery, just about about half a mile up the hill. We were kept there as a first temporary camp. Me one night we were through there. I was there about 6 months. They sent us down to North Point camp.
How were you treated up there? Were you cared for properly in the hospital?
Under the circumstances, perfect. I wish to go on the Yonder Raid. After the sentries went through the barracks, we'd on our way out, go raid some of these shacks that they had, or buildings that were full of wood. Come back, clothing, food, medical supplies, or cigarettes. It didn't last very long because of, as soon as they started finding more stuff in the barracks or in the monastery that we. They figured we should have. We got west and that was all cut off. Guard was put on, more guards were put on. We had less chance of getting out. So we had to give that up. Lots of fun trying, though.
Did they put you to work?
Oh, yes, we did. Right after we were put down to North Point Camp. And then we went, there were too many work parties from there, just on the island, more or less. When they took us, concentrated all these smaller camps. They one big one, the regular garrison there, Champs-Ripoux on the mainland. Camp Champs-Ripoux, that's where we ended up. And we took all the small camps, put them all into a big one. And that's a regular British garrison. That's the day, that's where the Japs hit us first. And we're in that camp there still. At least we lasted longer than Singapore did.
You did?
17 days a night, and Singapore only lasted 7.
They were Americans, were they? British. When you were in the hospital, you hadn't gone raging, or in that early, that monastery camp, were you eating better than normal, or was that sort of a best of you, that race?
Well, as long as the food lasted, we had quite a bit with us. And supplies in the hospital, as long as they lasted, we were eating not too bad. But then it lasted a few weeks. Nothing really to account for it or amounted to anything. What we did have, it was cut down so fine that it was practically nothing. Then when they started eating us their diet, that was much, practically nothing too. It was just enough to keep you alive. More dead and alive after a while.
When you feel that you completely healed well and got better in that hospital, did you?
Well, the wound, no. because I still have pieces of shrapnel coming out of my face, neck, and all over the place, part of your head, body. Where's that? Because I've got a spot right here. Just the other, not long ago, about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, we went to a banquet, and I was shaving there. As long as I shaved down, I was already the one to wind up. I cut a piece of shrapnel, but just good enough like that teaching one. Pieces coming up.
So well, they penetrated very deep.
Oh, yeah, well, they couldn't clean that out all out. It was too open to wound it.
But he stitched in it.
Oh, down there, yes. Right here, we were going to, this time, when I got this last piece out, one of the pieces. The pieces, real highly steel, but just jet black. What is the size of match it? But you still get a lot of the boys still complaining. Get pieces coming up, breaking out through the skin. A lot of them I've talked to still have a lot of pieces. They can feel different parts of the body. They don't bother to even to have it taken out because it's not bothering them. Some bother them, or some don't. But there's nothing to see a piece shaving a little bit too close. You find yourself hitting pieces of steel.
But your arm?
They were just a. That's nothing there. It's healed up. All you can see is the scab right there. It's all there is. It's a ricochet bullet that got me.
So you weren't hurt, you're damaged, really?
No, I just cut in deep. And I healed it.
So when you put on these work parties, what did you do?
Well, ending there's several different parties to go out every day from the mainland. But the airport. That was a puzzle too, because the Kaitek Airport was mostly built by our work. All these Chinese used to have their cemeteries there were hundreds of years old. And the British authorities, they couldn't get any push from the Chinese government to tear down their cemeteries or their buildings or anything like that. And they used to have some of these here mausoleums there and all that. Wouldn't let them do it when the Japs come in, they just send in the trenches, plowed everything up.
So they actually desecrated the Chinese cemetery to build that.
And then there's the oil companies just have the warehouses there. When the Japs took over, they used to have their fuel. For Navy and Air Force. Now their airplanes used to get damaged or brought shot down, and they bring them down there to salvage what part they could. And we had to go to parties, salvage these engines, tear these engines apart, and salvage the parts that could still be used. There's a lot of fun there. Watching what I like about it is the day those Americans come in at raids every 20 minutes. Watch from our camp, from Chancery Pool, looking towards Hong Island. And the harbor was just like more of a crescent shape. They made sure to work in that place.
What year was that? Was that later on?
Oh, I have near the end. Within a year or so at the end. After that, everything started to go down, and we could tell when the Japs were getting the worst of any licking, if they got licking anywhere, because they'd. He given us a going over. Everybody on any pretext, no excuse needed, and just hammer anybody at any time they wanted.
What was your work detail here?
Well, we had these, what the miners used to have in the old mines, these trucks on rails. So we had to go and dig into the hills, fill them up, push them up into these. Because the Hong Kong airport to just went a swamp. Fill it in, level ground up, roll it with these big rollers, and build it up.
And it was all done with hand labor?
All along, as long as we were there, done by hand labor. But I wouldn't say we finished it, because there's a lot more work to do. we could do. We had to walk from our camps every morning. We searched inside the camp before we went up, so we didn't make sure we didn't have anything, take anything out with us. When we got out the gate, we searched again. We searched about halfway down to the airport. Or any work party, anywhere we had to go, regardless of where it was. And then once we got to the airport, we searched. Once or twice during the day we'd be searched. In fact, same procedure was they'd gone through coming back to camp at night.
And
so walked there and back in a wood all day.
How far a walk was it?
Oh, I'd say about 6 or 7 miles.
Gee, that must be hard on
you. Well, that's where a lot of the boys didn't make it.
Did you still manage to conceal everything in all these searches?
Well, I had one experience. I had to go with two Russian, quite Russian engineers. One worked at the at this time at the dockyards on the island. The other was a civil engineer. And we were running short of shoes. And at the at that oil company's yard, I found a tire in one of the buildings. And I slashed a few pieces up and put them in the cap of my legs. They took it in, and how they didn't find it there, I don't know what. One time I was scared, because you ever get caught and then you come to camp, boy, you were given a going to work. You never forgot, and I saw lots of that. And I got away with it.
And what did you do? Make yourself shoes?
Make leather, sort of tongs that they have here.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing you could wear. And that lasted a long time, hard time. That's the hardest work I had to do with makeshift knife, cutting it out, and the fastest. Worked the fastest to get that done so we could have them on our feet for next morning's work party. But I didn't go out very too many work parties because as soon as all the fevers and everything started hitting me, diarrhea and everything else, I was in the hospital side for a month. Well, it's like across the street, hospital compound and a work compound. And I spent about 2.5 hours. Well, over half my time. I'd say about 2/3 of my time passed aside.
What did you have?
Aaron, you name it, I've had it.
Did you catch the period with that tip?
No, that was the only thing we did. I think it was had a small, mild attack, but we didn't want to nothing. Because there's a few of us used to go out every day and to break in the day. First month we were in the camp. We went to go out and take showers. We kept our hair cut short, real short, and wore the little clothing you could possibly get away with, to sort of get hardened up, toughened up. And we used to take cold water showers 3 or 4 times a day. And our skin got so hard that even the needles, we were given injections for different things, couldn't take effect then. They really have to jab you with a needle. And you start getting needled 2 to 8 to 10 needle times a day for different things. Your skin soon got used to being punctured.
Did you ever, did you have all this meat on your party? Did you have to move so much stuff a day, or was there
anything? You just had, sometimes they'd make up a daily quarter, but otherwise, at the start they were more strict. Really strict. You had to keep moving. But after a while, they found out that you'd have Canadians more or less stated together and the British stayed together. That's where a lot of the British didn't like it because we'd keep working. Slow but sure. Just keep moving. Keep moving all the time. As not to give the guards a chance to take a swipe at us. And the British didn't like that. They wanted to lag and slow down there. That's the reason they used to get beat up quite a bit more than we did. So we stayed to ourselves and they stayed for themselves.
Did you get any pay for that work?
Well, what they call 10 cents a day, and then we used to pool our money to buy some syrup for the ones doing well for ourselves and for the whole camp. Because 10 cents a day was like 10 cents. And the serum wanted about $5,000 and all through. come like us. It'd take quite a few days of working day to buy the sermon. And when we got it, it was watered down so much that it was only used for the ones that were really sick or needed it.
Who'd you buy it from? Japs?
We found out warehouse after warehouse full of Red Cross parcels that were sent to us that were supposed to be delivered to us. And all the time we were there, which we never got. We never got it for quite a few years after. And when we used to go on our raiding parties, we run into these warehouses. And these warehouses are bigger than Eaton's in Bay. They're full of Red Cross parcels. Instead of handing us those Red Cross parcels, or even one a week or one every 2 weeks, things may have been a lot different. Because they had our own type of food and everything. And then another thing that we didn't like about when the parcels come through, much as we like to see them, is that the camp commandant, the Jap commandant, he'd get all his gang together. They put up tables there and chairs, and they'd sit down there, and every man, as his name was called out, he was given a parcel. He had to take his cigarettes out or some food and leave half it behind for him and his gang. So we got down a little bit of that parcel of any, all depends on the size of it. But I will think I give credit to our officers. See, the officers, they weren't just Jap hunters to our officers or mean to them, except a few of them that I know. They never bothered with their parcels, and after a while, our officers, when they had cigarettes and parcels in their parcels, they'd pool their cigarettes and give each man so many decks each of their own. And that was something that was really appreciated, because we used to take one day we could give such two or three decks apiece. Only one cigarette before it was smoked. It was dried up or it wasn't used. And it left to smoke because every man prized that. It was prized possession of the smoke. The only thing that I didn't like, I saw I was a Batman after a while. Captain Batman from one of our officers here. He was in charge of the orderlies that were looking after the hospital end of the compound. And one of the orderlies slept in one day. He had taken the blame for it. He got it going over it. Never was the same man after that. We didn't hardly, if I hadn't known that was who went in that shack, come out, if I didn't know who, it was him that went in there, I'd have never looked at it.
What they did not see?
Oh, God, they beat him in the chief's life. Butts, rifle butts and everything else, he's swollen, bleeding. Come back here to Canada, we come back here, we long before he passed away, too. Didn't know how to
raise it. They damaged his brain, I guess.
I don't think there's, it wasn't damaged to a certain extent. That man suffered. There's quite a few other officers got beat up. Got a rough going. Shoved around every once in a while. I hadn't seen him, but I know he was. I heard it, and it was told by different men that he got it going over quite a bit. And that was simply because he asked for the Jap commandant for medical supplies, which were refused. The more he tried, the more he got himself. But one thing I will say about Dr. Crawford, he operated on that man with appendix with just a razor blade. And that man pulled through. Give that man credit for the illegal or not.
Did you get any medicine when you were in the hospital? What did they do for you?
Oh, that's niacinamide injections. Different acid that was shoved into us to kill these.
Very, very
no lead. God, I want some of these men watching them and laying in the hospital, weighing 200, 250 pounds, and I knew down there, well, they didn't weigh that much, it was full of water, and that's all very is. As water goes resurrection from the rice, the lack of solid foods, no exercise, none of the cold.
Malnutrition.
Something wrong. Have fun.
Did you get better rations in the hospital? Or less?
We got the rice, but only that you maybe got a few spoonfuls more than the other. But that was only while you're in the hospital then for a week. And once you got out, if there's any, once the rations were given out, see down to the, if there's any left over, well, the ones that come out of the hospital for that week, following week, were given the rest that was left over. That didn't want to roll beans. But to us, it was lots.
That's what you thought of, I
suppose,
all
the
time was
good. Well, that's good to know. I think of the next day, too, what was going to happen. But one thing about some of the jab guards, some of them are shooting us pretty good as long as you work. They stop up during the morning, you get a candy or toothy candies, small candies and a cigarette. Same thing in the afternoon. And if you know, you behave yourself, give them the trouble, they give you no trouble. And like I said before, we always knew when they were getting a beating in anywhere, since they take it out on us.
That was the commandant, was he the meanest one?
Well, there's two or three different ones that I can remember of. And that's how we knew what we got it. We knew what they were getting beat somewhere or got a good shellac in someplace. And when they took it out on us, but they were strict. They made up their minds that they didn't need any real excuse or open excuse to hammer you around. Just few of them never turned up. After a while, these guys, especially at nights, they go through the hut checking all of the guys, all the prisoners. Few of them didn't show up after a while. Guards.
The guards. You figure the men got
armed to
them. Was
it
reprisal thing
against you? Good. Well, they made reprisal. I think cut off our rations or did something that made us work longer. Beat a few of them up trying to get the information which they never got. Ended up with taking everything, all the view board that they had on top, because they were low ceiling in the huts, and not higher than this. And nothing but very, you could see the roof, what was left of it. The buildings, and they took the doors and windows out. So we had a makeshift barricade, anything we could find, tin, paper, close the windows off. The same as the beds, they took all our beds out, and the beds there were in these English garrison type. Two sections of solid steel, with strips of steel in it. Well, if you didn't have a bed, you lay on the floor. They cleaned everything. We couldn't do nothing. Still got away with lots of things, though.
Must have buried some stuff, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had ammunition buried, rifles buried. We were told through the grapevine, the Indians that were there. Naturally, they were put to work for the Japanese, policing the island and the mainland. So they were the only ones that had ammunition. They were under strict supervision, June, no doubt. And we had ammunition hidden, and rifles and stuff like that. We had finally got information that if the Japs were to start losing the war, or the Americans, or anybody coming in trying to relieve us, we'd all be shot. We got wind through the grapevine that Jack wouldn't have a chance of shooting us all, because the minute they started to move in close to camp, the Indians would take over, and this local unit that was there, Hong Kong Volunteers, that were working for the Japs, they'd go on dig up those rifles and come in to help us. I doubt if they'd have gotten very far, but who knows.
Those are things that gave you guys lots of hope.
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't pull anything like that, you
would be miserable. Well, there's a lot of things you had to figure for yourself. As far as each is concerned, to survive, you just had to take it whether you liked it or not, and whether it tasted like anything else you want to name. You just ate it, would be able to have something in your stomach to keep it going, keep alive. Boy, I just couldn't take it. They're so used to, I guess, to the finer foods. Once that ran out, they ran out too. Quite a lot of them, I will say one thing, I'd say 9 out of 10. By that time, the food ran out, they were in no condition to take any other kind of food. So it was just a matter of time with them. And then when the derby hit the camp and different diseases, no resistance built up, they were easy victims. I don't think I'd care to see anybody or go through that again. Tell them, well, they never survived.
Did you get posted to Japan?
No, I did. There were three work parties, three drafts that were sent from the mainland, camp people, and three drafts, they were picking out the most able-bodied men. I couldn't make out. You know, I got a kick in the pants for the last time for sneaking out of, after being chased from the lineup back to the hospital side. I sneaked out and got in the line again, and I got caught by the camp doctor and the big Indian up and he gave me a lift. I felt that for days after. You know, I want you to go, he says, I'll get, make sure you go with it without the test. Didn't work.
Japanese guard you had was community
quarantine.
Do you remember any
meetings
people?
No, I've seen lots of them. Guys. Well, this man I was telling you about, the doctor proper operator on for appendix. It was my duty, one night duty night, and this Jap soldier come through the camp, and he sneezed. Cold, and he had a cold, caught a cold on top of it. Pretty sick guy, boy, there for quite a few days. He turned around, he was just going to hit him with the bucket right across the nose. Showed a mark on him. Operated on him. And saved that guy's life, otherwise he'd probably end up killing him right there. He because he's one of these short little guys, 4 foot something, thick glasses, he could see good 10 feet ahead of him. But he didn't last long because he was found dead. Yeah. Seward. It was Hicks Biddle.
The Japanese guard. So the guy got to him.
Not from whom. But the first letter was received here in Winnipeg. My wife was living with her parents on Berry Street near the hospital. The one I sent, the first card I sent, was the first letter, first news received, actually from us. His wife had the, she phoned Free Press and Tribune, and they would come up and photograph it. Right now it's in Ottawa. I've got a photostatic copy of all different things. But the
did
letter,
you have a radio in camp?
There were two that I knew of. We had one hidden in a valve of a sewer valve. There's a regular one on top, dummy one, and the one on the bottom. Lower than that one yet. We had it tied on wires. And exactly the last bit of news we heard about, I heard, I was on duty tonight with another lad. 2:30 in the morning, we heard the news. The Japs surrender. And then the batteries just clunked up. And no more news after that. And that was, it was quite a coincidence because I used to celebrate my birthday on August 10th. And it was the morning of August 10th that I heard that news, 2:30 in the morning. So when we watched ourselves, when we left the camp, no. But it was worn out late. Next day, the Japs were in there miserable with as usual. Because they got quite a slacking run that day, a week or so before that. That was our sure sign of sure news that they got licking someplace. But we should get all that information into the grapevine too. People come to the fences. And the rice that they gave us the first grade, they wouldn't even export it. There's nothing for a lot of the boys that would take the half a cup of their rice, pull it all together and go to the fence and feed the Chinese people. The guys would let it give it through, but as long as we didn't get close to the fence, too close, or touch them, we couldn't touch them. But they bring us information. Well, they slipped the, no turn like that, but just tell you, some of these here local people, they tell us what's going on, where the Japs are there, beating them. Exactly where it was and what happened to them. But that used to make me feel good, just to watch these people take that race. Especially the women with young children. We feed them the rice. Don't you think you're handing them a turkey dinner or something?
And it's funny, no matter how down the guy got, you know, still
kind of. Well, they used to pay us back for some other things, bring the stuff. Even a lot of these guys, they like some of the Jack guys, used to make up their own money there. Print their own money. When they were caught, they used to get beat up too. Their spears never left them behind. They get away with anything too much. But they used to bring in supplies to us after, or if we saved any money, we'd give them so many yen or two, bring the stuff in, they'd bring it in.
There wasn't one that
Oh, yeah, bribed left and right. All it was lacking was, on our part, was not enough money.
Not enough to bribe with.
That's it. And everything was so expensive, it was kind of sky high. Because as the fighting got closer to near the end of war, everything was tightening up.
Yeah.
Japs couldn't come in, they couldn't go out or come in to Hong Kong or any other place. Because all the oceans, all the water was covered by the Americans and the British and all that. Things got tighter, everything else got tighter. Food was lacking, clothing was lacking, and any clothing we had Jack wanted, they bought it from us, and that's what we used to make, get our extra money. They print their own money, buy our stuff, We'd use their money to go and get them to bring us stuff into camp. As long as it lasted, it was all right. But there's nothing to see under your bed, the two-section bed, half full of paper money and all underneath. And in a few minutes, it was gone. Buy a pack of cigarettes, it cost you up anywhere up to 500 yen. As soon as we got it, it was gone.
What did you have for clothes?
Our own clothing start lasted quite a while, and they used to issue us of the odd shirt or trousers and pants and like that. Not very stable stuff.
I know the most of the Japanese war pictures, the prisoner pictures, that most of you guys don't wear shirts.
No.
They were saving their shirts, or they didn't have them.
Well, the shirts didn't last long there because they're three-year stuff. They were just to last a while, and then if you didn't wash them right, or often, it just practically disintegrate on you. They rot away quick.
Shoes was another problem.
Started to make these wooden shoes that are clogs. Anything to do? Got so used to them, you just like wearing shoes at home now. But your feet got as hard as nails. So old you could walk on fire and barbed wire, you wouldn't feel it.
You really get tough for that.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that's the fun we had when we were on the way home. There's 95 of us. First party landed in Philippine Islands. The American nurses there were trying to give us, we were there 5 days, this advance party. And they give us all the medical injections, all that different things. The medical unit, the American medical unit, was giving us needles out of the party that I was with. They broke many a needle trying to give us injections. Well, this side, this heap here, right in here, was so full of, so hard on my chest and arms, so full of holes, and the skin got so hard, and the meat inside your flesh is as hard as nails. And it was almost 2 years after before I could feel it, have any kind of feeling in this hip. Getting the injections in Hong Kong. And that's for the nurse, even in the arm. She's a big 6-footer, boy, she was right there, Annie Oakley type. She broke 5 needles on me before she got the 6th one in.
Was she a white nurse?
American nurse, American Army nurse.
Oh, she was.
And this was in Philippine Islands when we were coming back home.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah.
Because the way they picked us up, they picked us in Hong Kong, and there's so many, I think it was 95 berths available. One of the ships that were coming in from closer to Japan, and they stopped up in Hong Kong to pick us up too, take us home, took us to San Francisco from Manila, from Hong Kong to Manila, were British ships that took us, and from Manila to Frisco was American ships, and then we got to Manila. That's where the nurses had to go to work on us.
And I guess you had to change clothes, huh?
Oh, yeah, they give us all the clothing we wear, drag, or carry. And we're also given $200 each as a present from Uncle Sam, not to be charged to us, to our account.
The Americans gave that to you. They were very good to you guys.
Oh, gosh, yes. And we're told that once we got to Victoria, not to sign any papers that our own paymasters would ask us to do. And not to accept any, we're not to sign those papers if they want to put that $200 against us. Because that was a present from Uncle Sam. We would. And when we left Hong Kong to go to Manila, the British government there gave us £2 each for spending money. Everything on the ship was provided what we needed, what we could eat. We couldn't eat anything outside, right out of that we're used to here now.
You had to go slow.
We had to take it easy because the smallest egg was like a banquet to us. And it was proven, I proved it myself, I couldn't eat the smallest little egg. It was about the size of a 50-cent piece. I couldn't finish it. Because my stomach shrunk to such a slow or low ebb that any amount of food, more than what we were used to, would sort of stretch our stomachs and probably burst.
How's your health now?
Not too good. Not what I like to do. It's starting to catch up a little. Well, I know I contacted this rheumatic arthritis. And each year it kept getting worse. I'm just saying that the first time I knew I had it, just a pain in the back coming down my spine. And I was laying there like I think it was a stone or something in your under your skin. You're rubbing.
Where was this, in camp or
went
home?
I got home, and camp and home. But it kept building up a little worse, month after month. And I went to work at the post office. And got this emphysema, I had a quick smoke, 6 years ago. And that's not good because it slows me down.
That's right.
I had to leave work, retire on medical grounds from the post office. That's something I didn't like neither because kind of work I like to do.
And what were you doing there?
I was a carrier.
Yeah, nice.
Letter carrier.
And nice outdoors.
I couldn't stand inside work because I couldn't stand anybody loading over, breathing down my neck. So I used to get into fights and arguing with supervisors and all that. I chased one out. I just lost control of myself when I said, I'm pick on another Englishman, clerk. Short little sick man. He was sick that day. That man was really sick that day. And the supervisor picked on him and I just jumped. I think if I'd have gotten along, I could. Because I just completely lost control of myself. And he ran because he could see me coming down. I had one, his supervisor, under him. I had him by the arm with a load of papers in his hands and he didn't even have time to grab him. Dropped him. At least I lost control of myself. And I told him that if I catch you, he was so busy, I'm kidding.
Do you think
that's an after effect? Well, it's just nerves. Nerves all shot.
Yeah.
And anything like that, or to take much to irritate you or get you going. And the worst thing anybody could, in my experience, was I couldn't stand anybody going and say, yeah, I feel sorry for you, and what you, how did you make it out, or what happened, and all this. I didn't want it.
You
I wanted to stay away from that. The less I heard or about that or asked questions, but I liked it.
You didn't want to be reminded of it.
I didn't want to know. I was, my tougher battle, the toughest one was trying to sort of overcome that. And that's why I used to run into the post office and worked for what, probably 17, 18 months inside before I went out to carry it. And it was after that incident that the station supervisor told me, called me over the side and says, yeah, I see you. See, would you have chased that man up and did what you said you'd do if I got myself down? I said, I can't stand anybody being picked on for no reason at all.
You had enough of that,
yeah. Well, sure, but that was my hardest battle, trying to control my temper. And it didn't take very much to get me going in there. I wasn't the only one there. I'd say 7 out of 10 were in the same position. Because when your nerves are shot, it didn't take much to get you going. I guess just my estimation. I hate to see anybody picked on for no reason at all, even in the post office.
Can't stand me.
No, I can't stand me. Even a dog. Even when I got work in the post office, I paid a lot more than one fine for smacking people right in the nose. Especially one instance where a reaper Friday had get me to take a drink of home brew with a bunch of Indians that were sitting in his house. And I refused and he called me an SOB. Well, he had his window broken with just a pillow in it. And I get him right down right in the tooth and broke his nose and broke his teeth. I took him away from home. Because he knew he was in the wrong. And if he'd have said much more, all I had to do was report him to the relief and he'd been cut off. I tried to get him to I never did like him because I tried to get him all the years I was in that on that different job. Well, not job on the on that street of his. I tried to get him to work for me for Christmas helper, and he wouldn't do it. He said, I'm making more, and I'm relieved I am. I probably work.
Just lazy, no good.
Oh, he was a fat slob. Dude, froze boy. So I had no love for him, he had no love for me, but he never reported.
Do you have a hard time to go back to a family life and taking orders and everything when you came back?
No, family was pretty good to me. They knew more or less. They were, I don't know whether they were being forewarned or what. But myself, I also helped myself too, and then our own doctors here, they couldn't tell us what to do because they didn't have us finally diagnosed or...
Didn't have the drugs they had today?
No, not only that. That could have been quite a bit to do with it too, but they couldn't figure it out. They didn't know what was actually wrong with us to 100%. And what I used to do at home, and the children got noisy, I just grab my hat and go to the gym. Go for a walk. And then, while I was still in the uniform for a discharge, I was discharged about a year after, well, practically a year after I come home. Nylons were scarce. Well, I still had my uniform on, flashes and all that. I got a few people in department stores. It's nothing for me to go out with $40-$50 in my pocket. Other people's money, girls' money, married women, friends of family, wives and family. Go to different stores and get a dozen nylons there, a dozen pair of nylons there, come back, give it to them. That's one of the large things I used to do.
Was that a source of favor?
Pardon?
That was a favor for them?
More or less, because they couldn't get the nylons.
No.
A lot of these women that were working, what woman doesn't like nylons?
Yes, not only that, they couldn't get away to get them.
No, they couldn't get them, no. But I got to know a few people in different places.
Did you like army life, otherwise?
Yeah, we do all right. Sure taught you a lot. Discipline and how to take orders. And you got to know a lot of men, different ranks, different officers that were in civilian life in different jobs. And it was an experience. Good one, too. And I'm not sorry. Nor do I feel sorry for myself or anybody else, just because we were out at that end. So if somebody had to go there, and just because it would happen to be our regiment, no reason to feel sorry for yourself.
Do you think your regiment was well trained, huh?
No, there's no thing. Because going there, we were trained on this Henley's. Tear them apart, put them together, blindfolded. We had the Lewis too, but they were not good. No, these guns have they lob shells over little hills or
mortars.
Mortars, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're taking mortar training on the ships going there. On board of them. Because I knew as soon as they started giving us that training, that type of training, we knew we were going to a place where there's going to be action anytime, or even if we were told that we might have, maybe forced to ride our way off the ship, which turned out to be false. That was nice anyway, while it lasted.
Did you go re-hospitalized when you got back here?
No, I couldn't stay in hospital. I had nothing to go over there. So I just told her to go home.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to celebrate Christmas. All kinds of liquor with. I never got that far. Because just about a week or 10 days before Christmas, I broke out the yellow jaundice. So the only way I was sent right away to Fort Dawson Barracks Hospital. And the only way I could get out for Christmas dinner was taken home by ambulance and picked up a couple of days later by ambulance.
You must have been very sick of that.
Oh, that is sick. Because that is your kidney and liver. All the poison's backing up in the system.
I suppose that really wasn't from the prison camp.
Well, it was the result because...
No, the guys had.
Oh, but to get it to almost 4 years over there and then come home and end up with getting it here?
Yeah. But the germ was there, don't get yourself.
Oh, yeah. It was there, no fun. Because we could feel that way. As soon as we started eating our type of food, everything going sort of backwards. You can only eat so much. And the more you tried to eat, the worse it got. There was such a shock, or I guess a strain to the stomach, that our kidney and liver couldn't absorb it. And that was all.
Of course, your kidney and liver were overworked with that dysentery.
Okay, and dysentery and dengue fever and all that stuff. But I was sure lucky I didn't get a good dose of that diphtheria. Because in Hong Kong, there was nothing to be during the day. All day long, a couple of bunch of foreign sitting around talking or smoking something like that in the hospital side or the compound, working compound. You have to be talking all of a sudden, one or two of them will grab your throat or his chest and look at it. That was the end.
Did you hit them so fast?
They were sick, especially in the hospital side. That's where they finally had to put blowing the last post for the guys that were dying. Because you can see in the faces of the prisoners that are sitting around there. Since I heard that they just started looking one another one, and the next one was to go.
Very depressing.
Oh, a lot of the blood just went berserk. They had to cut it out.
Did Camp Commandant ever be decent to you guys? Ever grant you the chance of work you did or anything like that?
Not that I can remember.
Yeah. So never was enough for me then?
Well, that's the attitude they took. Because they make sure that we're moving. Maybe slow, and keep moving. They wouldn't give a chance to more than two to get to keep together.
They'd keep us split apart.
Keep us going and separate as much as possible. But we survived it. Quite a few of them did, but I think lost more men during our stay there after the war than actual fighting. So we had no control over anything to say in it. But that the only thing, as I said before, that I don't think I'd care to go through it again.
No, I don't think so.
No, I'd like to know what I'd like to see anybody else go through that.
No.
There's no point. These people there really don't understand it.
Did you see the Japanese being cruel to other people's
eyes? Oh, lots. I've seen girls beat up, old ladies raped, and girls raped, shot, stabbed. The best thing you can do is keep your mouth shut, say nothing.
They were brutal people.
Well, the ones that hit us, first bunch that hit us, cause of our downfall, not only the run out of ammunition and food and all that, but they were throwing fresh batches, regiment after regiment, at us. We hadn't even had a chance to have sleep or rest or no food for days on end. No relief or nothing. And that was part of the ship there. It was quite a big contingent headed for Australia. We learned later that they had to divert quite a bit of that continent to fresh supplies for the Japs that were hitting us. And that was the only reason that they did get us in 17 days. It was hammering day and night, right from the Army, Navy, and Air Force hammering the hell out of us.
We had no Air Force at all.
Yeah. No Navy, no law. Few of these ferries they had there for weren't worth nothing. And they burnt them or blew them up so the Japs couldn't even get them. Some of the British had a chance to get on some of these boats. Some of them may have made it as far as Macau or maybe further out. We don't know. We did find out that they haven't.
Do you have any prison breaks?
One way I know of it from our North Point camp, there's four of our corporal and three or four privates broke away during the storm, but they were caught. Next morning, they were shot. Different other plagues. Some of the people that lived there for years on the island or the mainland, the odd one that made the break, well, they had outside connections.
Yeah, you had to have outside connections.
See, and they know the talk, the language, they could talk, where we couldn't. And there were tanned, like, almost like a tan when the south levels to them were.
They had more Japanese pictures than
that. Oh, yeah. But it wasn't, it didn't pay any of us to do it, because the minute we stepped outside the camp, we were finished. Didn't know which way to turn.
No, you're a white man, won't you?
Oh, gosh. We did give away right there. And if you didn't have your credentials there to be found with outside, and then you were up against a brick wall. You were in line for a good beating and probably shot for trying to escape. So, yeah. Quite a few of the Americans were caught there. Some of them were caught in the hills spying for the Americans. This one used to come into camp after the war was over, and he was a mile and a half away, quite a long period. And he was telling us all after it was all over, when he was allowed to go, people were allowed to come to camp. He gave us quite a talk. And he said, I could see you people from where I was. And he never stayed in the same place, same hideout, over one or two days. Kept moving all over, so Jeff never caught up with him. But he was just a young guy, too.
And he lived through the war, ever?
He had his outside connection. He was a young guy, too. I doubt if he was 30 years old.
I heard one guy escaped from China or something.
That would probably have to be an Englishman. And then he'd have to go all the... He'd probably had friends, had outside connections, knew the route and everything.
I suppose you used to sit every day and think of some way of escaping.
Well, he thought of it, but you had to have money too.
That's it.
First thing you had to do was, you'd have to have outside connections.
You have to bribe people.
You never got a chance. You wouldn't get a mile away from the camp before you're... No chance at all. So the best thing to do is use your head. Do as you're told, whether you liked it or not.
Made the best of it.
It's about the only thing you could do.
What kept you alive?
That's a $64 question.
You had a lot of spirit that you just made up your mind?
Well, I know myself. I ate what I was given to eat, whether I liked it or not. I kept myself going, thinking the next day. Like I was saying, kept myself as clean as I could. Kept myself physically able to even walk around with our feet and backs and everything used to bother us. But when I kept myself moving, it took my mind up a lot of other things. And, hoped that the next day would turn out a little better.
Yeah.
That's all you could do. But I never let things bother me any more than I could help it. When I was sent back from the hospital side to the working camp, they asked for my turn come up to go to work. I just went to work.
Regardless.
You had no choice.
Change
the scenery, but probably the candy and cigarettes had something to do with it, too.
Sure.
Get a little smoke and a little treatment. Well, on the average, a lot of these work parties, officers are in charge of work parties. Our own officers and the Japs. They weren't doing, they were bad if you watch yourself and did your work. But you try to get funny or lag or work on, you got yourself a slap or two or a kick in the pants or something like that.
And they had their job to do.
That's what I said. They had their job to do, we had ours to do. Because if they saw something happen or somebody pull out something irregular and they did nothing about it, then their officers going to beat them.
Oh, yeah.
So, what did they mean to do? That's what a lot of the Englishmen didn't like us. Because as much as we liked them to have done a lot of other things, which I know a lot of us would have, had we known that we stood a chance of completing it or getting away with it. And instead of doing that, we just did things that we were told, even if we didn't like it, just to keep our alive.
Certainly.
And that's why a lot of the other guys didn't like us.
Did you play cards or anything in camp?
Well, I wasn't much of a card player, but things like that didn't seem to agree with me. I still am not a card player.
No, it's not your type.
No, I like something that I see what I'm doing.
Did you take up any hobby, anything to sort of keep your sanity?
No, I used to go a lot walking. I did a lot of walking. Once I could, I don't know that, but quite often somebody said, Jap, the guard that got to know you, and that you had no to give them no trouble. They'd nothing to see you. They'd come up or walk by you and just give you a hint. Shake their hand. One guy used to be, every third day he was on guard. He'd see me walking up or running, and he'd point his head that way or point his rifle butt one way and another way. Two cigarettes waiting there against the curb or something like that.
Oh, yeah. So they were good in their own way.
In their way, as much as they could afford it. But they had a watch too, because I know a lot of them got caught leaving things like that behind. And the one that used to help me, this one little short guy, I never did see him. He only did it about 3-4 times for me, and then he disappeared. Because they never used to keep the guards there steady.
No, because they'd the guards get too familiar. Wrong.
I don't know. They had their job to do.
Did you ever work in a kitchen or any place like that?
No. No, they had their own. The kitchen gang was already allotted for cooks. Mm-hmm. There were our cooks before that, peacetime. Most of them were there. Kept on that.
Oh, yeah. Did you make, besides making yourself some shoes out of rubber, did you make yourself anything else? Did you conceive any other tricks to try to keep going?
Well, sure. One of the best things you do is a lot of boys took up knitting, crocheting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I couldn't go for that because my eyes weren't any too good then. They started to go and...
What they use for material?
Oh, string. String and anything you find. I think it was clothes or old shirts or any clothing you find, they could unravel. Doggone good things ever made. And any piece of steel, like a lot of boys used to go into making daggers or knives, something like that. You're surprised some of the stuff that they made up and finished off.
Was there a fortune in those things?
No, was it?
Just work it themselves.
Work themselves.
So
makeshift tool or something like that.
The guy if the guy who was invented used his head, he could get along a lot better in the camp than the other guy who just.
Because a lot of these here Jap guards used to buy all these here daggers and knives from boys. A lot of them kept them. But they had to watch who they were dealing with, because if you were caught with that thing, that boy, like, wouldn't want to plug nickel.
That's why how some of these people who pulled the past ones didn't show up again, eh?
Sure. Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. But we never delved into that because it was
best to keep your
giving eyes. Away. Give away your secrets. Then if you try to do that, they know. Yeah, they'll know that you had something to do with that or that person. The best thing to do is keep your nose clean.
This radio did boost your morale a lot when you hear it, didn't it?
Well, it didn't last long. We got it. It was one this year, not Danish, but Netherlands. Submarine crew that ever in one of the best. The newest submarine that was operating in those waters, and they were caught and sunk, and the three officers were brought into our camp, and one of them landed up in that section where I was in the hospital. That's how I got to know him, and he was quite a genius with radios. He was the one that rigged that one up, a false one on the top,
mm-hmm.
and the valve, and then the one that was operating the bottom one. I don't think we had it on a half dozen times.
And then the war was over?
No, the batteries were not.
Why?
Because how he got into camp, I don't know. I never did ask him. But he was one that got in.
Papers.
One of their type of people. I don't remember many of getting in, if any got in, but I knew the news we used to get mostly through the grapevine. So it's a good. They could send it. They could have, for no doubt, if they wanted to send us papers in. But they knew that they must have figured it was useless, because we wouldn't leave it anyway.
No, it's all full of propaganda.
Oh, God, there's a lot of that flying around. It's their business. They didn't thought, may have thought they were going to give us a lot of baloney, but take what they said and what we believe is two different things.
Yeah. Do you think that your brass group there
to us that they did, but it wasn't a Canadian government, it was a British government. Well, that's where another part that I say is, goofed or not goofed, somebody had good.
That's
just because it was us. And left the wrong end of the stick, there's no reason to blame nobody.
They had, before, who, did you relieve a couple of regiments when you were sent there?
Not that one.
You were just
reinforcing the garrison.
Reinforcing, yeah.
The ones that were there already. But, as far as taking away with it, no, didn't turn out. What blame? I can't blame anybody. I wasn't in a position to blame anybody. I had my orders, same as they did.
Are you working now?
No, I had to retire from the post office 2 years ago. Medical grounds. I miss it. I still miss it. I still go see the boys once in a while.
You mentioned Legion of Some Pressure.
Well, I am. That's where I was told by the doctor when my nerves started getting the best of me. And when this emphysema got in where I couldn't work anymore, I couldn't go out to the windows over 15 miles an hour. So, my nerves started really getting a little bad at me. And he told me to get interested in some work just to keep for the sake of. Having something to do, keep my mind occupied.
Yeah.
So I got myself elected to the sick visiting chairman of our Legion. I go around these hospitals. In fact, I got to go Tuesday next Tuesday again. Yeah, give the talk to the sick people of our leave branch or any Legionnaire as far as I'm concerned. Give them cigarettes, bars, books, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah,
like
just like a sick visitor.
That's right. But I got into that, I'm not sorry about it. I like the job. I like the reason I know the man that proposed that job to me. He said, you've got the time. That's what this job requires, is a lot of traveling time. And he said, you know what it means to have somebody come in the doorway and talk to you when you're laying in bed. He said, you had lots of time of that to think that over.
That's right.
And I found out, I never realized just how good it's make a person feel. I'm not a bit sorry, I'm glad I got in this time.
I think the Hong Kong situation really made, a man really proved himself there, didn't he?
Well, there's one thing I found out, and the one of the doctors, Indian doctors, he could tell when all these things started hitting the camp. He could tell that look, our son and wife's coming back already. He could tell over the men that had a hard time during their boyhood or upbringing, and well, went through the school of Knox, like he said. The way they took it there, the ones they could take in Knox. Quiet.
I'll turn it off for a minute.
Okay. Funny, something you can't forget, you've got to go through that experience to really get the feeling of it. But there is a time. You can see it when they have these here conventions every year, get togethers. Like this year, it's going to be more big again. Mm-hmm. And when you go to these conventions, or even the meetings, you see faces you haven't seen practically since we come back home. Funny how you get together, even the officers. You can't forget, and you don't want to forget.
You know, there's a certain pride in one.
It is. There is. I have no doubt. It's the same thing with every regiment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason for the legions being built up, different clubs. Like we have our, well, everyone is a Hong Kong that belongs to one legion or another.
That's right.
Or majority.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have our own. We have our own get-togethers, our own dances, parties, and stuff like that. And every time we had a convention,